Sarah of the Jason Ranch Show, brought to you by Robbins & Company Structural Moving and Foundation Repair. Lots of news happening all around the world and right here at home. Time to find out what's trending.
What's trending in Trumplandia?
So if you watch CNN or MSNBC, you would think that the president in Pittsburgh after the synagogue shooting got the cold shoulder and he wasn't wanted there. And there was protests happening. There's no doubt about that. But it wasn't necessarily a reflection of the community. It was more a reflection of anti-Trump folks who don't like the president and who would have been out there, I would wager, protesting if President Trump had come before the shooting actually took place. And they can do what they want. I don't care that they're out there protesting. You have the absolute right to protest, and you can mourn if some of the people were mourning in however way they want to. But we should state very clearly an expectation. The expectation is after a local tragedy that rocks the entire country, the expectation is that the president shows up. The president should show up. This is a moment to become united. Now, I know that activists don't want us to become united. I know that the media doesn't want us to become united so close to a midterm election where they think the divisiveness is going to hurt President Trump and the Republicans. But we have to push past that. And that's why you had the president show up in Pittsburgh on Tuesday. Now, if it were Obama coming, they would have been happy. If it was Obama coming to Seattle or Tacoma or Everett after, God forbid, a tragedy, I would be okay with that. Because it's the symbolism that's important. I don't necessarily like Mayor Jenny Durkan, but she engaged in some important symbolism for the Jewish community here in Seattle right after the synagogue shooting in Pittsburgh, putting more cops on the streets to check in at synagogues. I didn't think any of us were under threat here, but it was a good gesture, even if it was just symbolic. Symbolism sometimes can be incredibly important. It can be incredibly uniting. The only time I don't think they should come, any politician, is in the immediate aftermath of, say, a natural disaster or something that's ongoing where it pulls resources away from helping. Other than that, they should show up. Now we have video from inside the hospital where President Trump visited some of the patients from the shooting. He visited the staff, and they were overwhelmingly excited to see him. Now, that message, of course, didn't come across in the media. You didn't really see that on CNN. You definitely didn't see it on MSNBC. You didn't read about it in the New York Times. But it was caught on cell phone. And the president and the first lady, Ivanka Trump, Jared Kushner, they were walking outside. They were walking to leave the hospital when staff members had gathered to greet them and thank them.
Thank you, President Trump.
Thank you, President Trump.
Thank you for coming.
He's now walking towards them.
Thank you, President Trump. Thank you so much. That's a great gesture. Thank you, First Lady.
Now it goes on for another 40 seconds, basically getting the same thing. Now, do I think that's a reflection of everyone in Pittsburgh? No, I don't. But I also don't think the protests are a reflection of everybody in Pittsburgh. There are people who are fans of the president. There are people who hate the president. There are people who are willing to put aside any of their feelings that are negative to thank someone for coming in a moment to unite. Now, they knew that they were on camera, these folks. They knew that it was being recorded, and so maybe they put up a little bit of a front. It doesn't matter. The fact is, this message was not in the media. The media overwhelmingly decided to call it out as a negative experience, which is why the president keeps going after the media. He was at a Florida rally yesterday, and he called the media out for the way they portrayed everything.
Yesterday's visit to Pittsburgh was about coming together as a nation to comfort and to heal. After this day of unity and togetherness, I came home and sadly turned on the news and watched as the far left media once again use tragedy to sow anger and division.
CNN sucks. So, I mean, and then the media, of course, gets mad that Trump calls them out. If you don't give him anything to call you out on, if you're being so dishonest, he would stop calling you out because he wouldn't necessarily have the material. But the fact is, you keep unfairly targeting him. And you do it at a position of where you pretend what you're doing is news. On CNN today, the Chyron on screen said Trump released a new racist ad. Now, it wasn't analysis that they believed the ad to be racist, some analyst on the show, some editorial provider. No, they were taking an editorial position and presenting it as fact. They didn't say some believe this was a racist ad. They said the ad was racist. The ad wasn't racist. They don't like the ad. It's dishonest. And of course the president's going to call you out on that because Obama would call you out on that. I mean, I know we're pretending Obama never called out Fox News or Rush Limbaugh. I know we're pretending that. But it's normal. It makes sense. Let's find out what else is trending.
What's trending at home?
So Cairo 7's Gary Horker reports some Canadians are being questioned about their involvement in the weed industry when they cross the border into the United States. This is specifically happening at Blaine. This, according to immigration attorneys, those who admit to using weed or investing in legal Washington state marijuana companies, they actually can be banned from coming into the U.S. for their lifetime. Sam Znamer is a Canadian, and is that how you say it? It's Znaimer. You know, in cases like this, media, I don't need to know his last name. Say Sam, right? Sam is a Canadian investor, and he's been banned for life.
To my shock and horror, I was told that I...
Okay. First of all, you know, Canadians are so dramatic. To my shock and horror, no one talks like that. Have you ever said, have those words ever come out of your mouth? Ever? Anyone?
Yeah, every time somebody asks me about an interaction with you.
You don't say, to my shock and horror.
Oh, yes, I do. I pull out the full theatrics.
Okay, first of all, you just break down into tears. Let's be honest.
See?
Yeah. You don't say, to my shock and horror. Jason yelled at me. You said,
I hold a handkerchief to my forehead.
Like, oh. What you normally say is,
woe is me.
To my great expectation, Jason yelled at me today. To my shock
and horror. To my shock and horror, I was told that I was deemed to be inadmissible to the United States because I was assisting and abetting in the illicit trafficking of drugs.
Oh, to my shock and horror. Immigration attorney Len Saunders, whose office is just blocks away from the U.S.-Canadian border, says his business has tripled recently with calls from Canadian citizens who needed legal help fighting the lifetime ban.
It is a lifetime ban if you admit to a U.S. federal border officer that you've used marijuana and you're not an American citizen.
But hey, you know what? The law's the law, man.
Under federal immigration laws, it's a controlled substance and the officers are doing their job if they deny entry to a Canadian if it comes to their attention that they've used it or purchased it.
So I don't know how often this is truly happening. He points out, this lawyer, that it you know, when it does happen, it has an impact on us.
I think you're going to see less Canadians going down for games, Mariners games, Seahawks games, possibly hockey games when there's a hockey team. So, and even going shopping, right?
Okay.
Going to the LMLs, going to Nordstrom.
Okay. So there's not that many people who are investing in legal pot businesses in Washington State who are coming here from Canada, right? I mean, just as a percentage of the population of visitors, very, very, very low. So I think he's overstating some of the economic concerns. There are some economic concerns, but just lie. Just lie. Who's telling the truth when you're asked about smoking weed at the border? Just say, no, sir, I don't.
What a strangely random and personal question.
No, it's not. I mean,
have you ever used it?
They always, this is what ends up happening when I go to the border. And I'm not kidding. Every single time I've gone into Canada, I get stopped, and first they ask me, what do you do for a living? And I explain what I do, which is a talk show host, which I think is like a red flag, like a fake job. Even the last time I was down up there, I was with the Sounders, because I was part of the broadcast crew when they were on our sister station. They still said, and they always say it like this, you do realize that you're not allowed to bring marijuana into Canada. I know that it's legal in Washington State, but you can't bring it up here. I know that. Do you have any marijuana on you? I do not. Why don't you go pull over there? And then they search the car every single time. So the Canadians do the same nonsense that the U.S. I don't think they should do it. I don't care if you smoke weed. I don't care if you bring weed into Washington State, especially a state that legalized marijuana. I do not care. So this seems to go a little bit overboard, but I'm also not going to buy into the hype of, oh, the horrors of our economy, because it just doesn't impact us that much. Is that going to, well, how many people does he think is going to come down to games who will stop because they invest in weed companies here?
Well, when the Blue Jays are in town.
How many Blue Jays fans do you think are pot-smoking, pot-industry contributors? That cannot be a large portion. Oh, shut up.
You have to be high to like the Blue Jays.
Okay, fair enough. I will give you that point. 10 points to producer Darren. It's the Jason Rance Show. Welcome back to the Jason Rance Show. We are live in the Online Trading Academy studio. Don't forget to text us on the Numb Better Tax Resolution Hotline, 1-800-465-8770, at the bottom of the hour. Hall of Famer, legendary Seahawks, wide receiver. Steve Largent's going to stop by. He's a big fan of Susan Hutchison. He's going to tell us why. Seems like a really good dude, so I'm excited about that. But first, let's talk about a new system in place on the Burke Gilman Trail in Seattle for pedestrian and bicyclist safety. And if I'm being totally blunt, because that's my agent yesterday, we had a conversation and we were talking about how I'm a bad person, but he says, at least you're honest. I'm like, you know what? You're right. So let me be honest about the system. It's stupid and dangerous. It's stupid and it's dangerous. They're putting smart sensors on light poles. So when cars are driving by and they have to make a cross where they might be going over the Burke Gilman Trail, it'll alert pedestrians or bicyclists if they're coming. And the system makes no sense. What's weirder is the article we read about this on Cairo 7 makes even less sense because I read it like 17 times. It's short and I have no idea what it is. And then I watched the video associated with it and I think I have a better sense. So first of all, you need to have an app downloaded on your phone, and via the app, it will alert everybody that there's either a car coming or you're in the car and there are pedestrians coming, okay? So it's able to track your app. Can I point out that when you're driving, you're not supposed to have your phone out? So I'm not entirely sure an app on your phone is the best way to get the attention of drivers, unless, of course, you want to get a ticket. So are you exempt from tickets as you're driving towards this thing if your app starts to make noises and you touch your phone? Is this a pass?
Is this the kind of one that tracks your whereabouts even when it's not
on? I don't know. I think it's designed to only go off and check you when you're near one of these sensors. And so, but let's go with the sensor on the pedestrian and bicyclist one. I get that it will be meaningful to the pedestrian, who presumably is just walking and maybe they're listening to a podcast or they're streaming the KTTH smartphone app, which if you haven't downloaded, you should download. But if you're a bicyclist, I don't understand what value this offers to you. Now, here's the good news about this. I don't think it's going to work anyway because the system on the poles with the sensors, it's powered by solar panels.
I could see why that would be an issue.
So a good several months out of the year, it's not really going to work all that well. Now, I don't know how much power is required for it to work, but you do know, especially since it's now November, we're going into several months worth of just no sun. We're not going to really see the sun at all. We'll be lucky to see the sun. And so unless it's able to harness that sun as infrequently as it's going to be seen, and then keep it powered this entire winter, I don't know what value this is going to be, other than people are now going to download the stupid app, all seven of the people, and they're going to assume that they'll get this little alert, so they're going to lower their sort of spatial awareness, thinking, oh, I'll get an alert if a car comes, and then bam, they get hit by a car.
It's a lot of variables for something that seems like no one will use and it won't be that helpful.
Can I offer a suggestion on how to be safe when walking the Burke Gilman Trail when you see that a street is coming? Like, look both ways. Let's just go back to look both ways and then proceed cautiously. You're listening to The Jason Rantz Show. Welcome back to The Jason Rantz Show on AM 770 KTTH and 94.5 FM on the Greater East Side. When athletes and celebrities get involved in politics, they're generally progressives fighting for Democrats. But in the case of Hall of Famer, the legendary Seahawks wide receiver Steve Largent, he's speaking up in favor of Susan Hutchison, who, of course, is here running to become the next senator from Washington State. And Steve Largent joins me this morning. Steve, good morning. Thank you so much for coming on.
Jason, good to talk with you. Thank you.
So it's always refreshing to talk to someone who's in public life who is either an athlete or celebrity who isn't necessarily towing a progressive line. In your case, obviously, you've run and been successful in campaigns representing the Republican Party out in Oklahoma. What did you see in Susan Hutchison that got you interested?
You know, I think two words come to mind immediately, and they are common sense. Susie has always been a person that has both feet firmly planted on the ground. She is full of all kinds of common sense, and she has been a friend for a number of years. In fact, maybe 20 years I've known Susie, and she's just a great person and somebody that I would love to see in public office.
What's an issue that's important to you that you think Susan excels on?
Well, I know her community service is not hiking or climbing mountains like Cantwell talked about, but Susie's all about helping others, and she's not a loner. She's very much a community person, and I think that. That's really what sets her apart. But, you know, she's also really has common sense solutions for things like health care, immigration, forest fires, which is a big issue on the West Coast and particularly in the state of Washington, and transportation. That's always a huge issue in the Seattle area. So, you know, Cantwell has all kinds of rhetoric, but not a lot of beef to show the people for her 18 years in Congress. And I think Susie would go in there and just light it on fire and really do a great job representing the people of Washington State.
Yeah, and I agree with you on that, because this whole idea of Maria Cantwell putting in the voter's guide her community services as she enjoys hiking, it just shows you she really isn't connected to Washington State, and that, you know, the line that the Cantwell campaign uses in calling her out sort of as this absent senator, it's true. She's not really in Washington all that much.
Yeah, that's right. And, you know, she's not in Washington State that much. And that's the problem. You really can't do anything in Washington without teaming with other people to get an issue recognized and voted upon. And so you can't be a loner. And you got to be a people person. And I know Susie Hutchison is a people person above and beyond anything else that she is.
Just joining me, we're talking with Steve Largent. He is, of course, the legendary Seahawks wide receiver, also a former congressman representing out in Oklahoma. For you, when you ran as an outsider, much like Susan Hutchison is running as an outsider. Neither are political insiders. Neither of you are professional politicians like Maria Cantwell. How did that experience as that outsider make you a better lawmaker once you were put in office?
Well, I think that I was able to see a lot of the silliness that goes on in Washington, D.C. that doesn't gain you any ground. And so the thing I always wanted to talk about were things that were important to the people that I was representing in Tulsa, Oklahoma at that time, not the silliness and not the elections and not, you know, stuff like that. But the real issues that people had on taxes and spending and the military and all kinds of issues like that, Medicare and Medicaid, I could go on. But those are the issues that people are sending you to Washington, D.C. to address.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, Maria Cantwell hasn't figured that out in 18 years. But I know that would be priority one, two, three, and four for Susie Hutchison going to Washington, D.C.
Well, and there's just something different about sending someone who isn't part of the political establishment that changes your mindset, I think, that when you're actually in D.C., of not being beholden to any interests, not always thinking about how you're going to stay in power for so long. But to your point, of your own experience of how will I actually represent the people? And these are people who you need to care about and you need to live with, live around.
Well, it also speaks to term limits, which is an issue that I was very much in favor of in years past. But that issue is kind of come and gone now. But anyway, I just think that it all comes down to a person's heart. And that's something that's hard to measure. But I tell you, when you talk to Susie Hutchison, you know her heart is definitely from Washington State. She cares about the people and the issues that are important to those people. And she's not, you know, off walking in the mountains and trails as her, you know, form of recreation. She's actually listening to people. And she would respond very, very favorably to those people in Washington State.
How much of the conversation about civility and incivility that we're having nationally do you think is going to impact this particular election, but really Republicans in general for a midterm? The expectation, of course, has always been that when you've got total power in Congress and the executive branch, you're going to lose at least one portion of that power, either the House or the Senate. But it does seem that Republicans are gaining some momentum nationwide in this sort of post-Kavanaugh world.
Well, I think a lot of the Democrats' tactics for this year, and we saw them express the Kavanaugh hearing, was that disruptive behavior that the Democrats were applauding, I think, is failing them. And I think that the American people have been bright enough to see that and have rejected it as well. And so I'm really optimistic that the American people are going to vote with their hearts and vote with their minds, and that there won't be the typical transition in midterm for this president or this Congress. And but I do think that it's time to get Congress on the ball, in particular in the Senate. They have piddled around and done nothing for too long. And so I think that the American people are going to send Congress, but more importantly, Democrats, the message that, hey, that the way you're playing is not us, and that's not America.
I hope you're right. I hope you're right about Susan Hutchison. I hope you're right about the Republican Party. When I said I was talking to you, we got a bunch of people who wrote in all saying, when will you return to Seattle and just run for office here so we can bring some common sense conservative? Because I have to assume, is it a little bit difficult, or was it difficult at the time, even though the timing is a little bit different, but coming out and, you know, owning the fact that you're conservative in a field that, at least by current standards, is generally presumed to be run by a lot of, liberal progressive folks?
It is difficult, but just being in politics in general is difficult, because every aspect of your life comes under the scrutiny and the microscope, and everybody's going to look at it and critique it and criticize it and criticize you when you do that. But you have to be willing to stand strong and say what you believe, and then vote what you believe. And that has been missing for Washington State, unfortunately, for the way most of their representatives and their two senators have been voting.
Last question for you. Again, it was one that was submitted by a whole bunch of folks, and it's unrelated to this, but the only non-football playing question has to do with people taking a knee during the national anthem. What has been your general take on that?
Well, my general take is exactly what you would expect. I think that, you can have issues that you want to express support for or not, but you don't do it during the national anthem. That is a sacrosanct thing, I believe, and I think all athletes, all people, should come together and be able to honor the flag and treat it with the dignity that it deserves. And particularly, I think about our fighting men and women who have fought in ages past and even currently for this country. And I know that I express their thoughts on this issue, that that these players have no right to take a knee when the national anthem's playing.
There you go. I've been talking with the Hall of Famer, the legendary Seahawks wide receiver Steve Largent, former congressman from Tulsa, Oklahoma, Congressman Steve Largent, speaking out in favor of Susan Hutchison, giving her his full support. She's running right now in Washington State. If you have not voted, shame on you. Vote, vote, vote. Make sure you're voting for Susan Hutchison. Steve Largent, sir, thank you so much for coming on. I really appreciate it.
Jason, no problem. Thank you.
Absolutely. You're listening to the Jason Rand Show. Welcome back to the Jason Rand Show on AM 770 KTTH and 94.5 FM on the Greater East Side. Seattle has an education levy on the ballot that no one is really talking about. Proposition 1 will impose a $600 million levy for education. Generally speaking, Seattle voters will support education levies. Generally speaking, they'll support kids. But my next guest, he hates kids, so he's against it. Joining us in studio, Saul Spady. He led the successful fight against the Amazon head tax, and now he's sounding the alarms against Proposition 1. Why do you hate children, Saul Spady?
Oh, Jason, what an intro. It's great to be here. I definitely say I don't hate kids at all.
Love kids, but the problem is this is not just about serving kids. I'm the one who hates kids.
Oh, Jason, I don't think you hate kids either, man. I think you're going to be a great dad one day. But no, I think the issue is that Seattle is reaching a point where we have to make tough decisions. We have a $6 billion budget. It's one of the largest in the country for a city our size. It's about $1.5 billion. Higher than Boston. And I don't know if right now is the moment where we need to be pushing so many dollars into something downstream, especially ineffectively. It's going to be about $20,000 per child that goes into pre-K. We're only going to be able to provide for about 4,000 of the total 11,000 kids, or actually 2,000 of the total 11,000 kids that are needed. So there's going to obviously be more tax increases down the road. And really, if you look at this, this is our politicians continually not understanding that the needs of this city really start with public safety. After that, it should be focusing on affordable housing. And then after that, possibly helping us get from point A to point B faster.
Where would the money be coming from in this case?
In this case, it's another...
that's why you're upset with it.
It's another property tax levy.
Yeah.
You know, one of the things with property taxes with the Seattle City Council is they don't tell you at all as council members that property taxes increase your rent. And for millennials and for people who are starting to really feel the pain point of living in Seattle, a city this expensive, I think we should be really open about every new tax measure. And if, you know, we can get another 1,000 kids into free pre-K, but there isn't any determinant about giving it to the kids who are most in need versus the kids who are less, and we maybe make 1,000 people go homeless, I don't know if the city has accomplished its core task.
And that's what I never understand about any of these catch-all solutions, and I put that in air quotes. We see it in Seattle with the free ORCA passes for students. Except it's literally for any student who works, except for kids, of course, who go to charter schools, but for any Seattle public school student. Why would we want to waste money subsidizing it for a family that can, in fact, afford an ORCA card? Why not prioritize people who are low income, save some of the money, and invest it in something that will help them, if this is all about helping the people who are in most need of help?
Right. And to be very blunt, I don't know if it's about helping those who are most in need. In many ways, the way Prop 1 is set up is to create a whole new type of preschool that has SEIU employees only. And, you know, if our goal in Seattle was to provide free pre-K to all, especially to the kids who are most in need, you know, not to use a dirty word, but maybe the best route would be to give every parent who wants it a $10,000 voucher for pre-K. So we'd do it for half as much with no government overhead. And we'd probably see a rash of really creative new pre-K institutions, and that would probably work better with the free pre-K program that Jeff Bezos is going to start implementing over the next 5 to 10 years. It'll come at zero cost to the taxpayers. And that's really where it's at. We've reached a point where priorities are important. When a city can't build the North Police Precinct, when we can't hire police officers, when we can't keep our streets clean from needles, is free pre-K really the core choice, especially when it's using a tax that's going to both increase the burden on homeowners and increase the burden on renters? And the city council has said time and time again that when rents go up, those at the margins are affected. And I think we as a city need to realize that our priorities need to be looking at those at the margins, those who've been lost at the margins, before we start providing these long-term solutions that I think Seattle can do. But first, we got to shore up some of the really obvious problems that we walk by on our streets.
Saul Spady joining me in studio. He led the movement to repeal the head tax in the city of Seattle, and now he's fighting against Proposition 1, which is a $600 million levy for education. You know, despite all of your valid criticism, Proposition 1 is going to pass. And so the question is, why do people keep saying yes? Is it purely because you don't think they know where the money is coming from and they're not thinking about that? Is it that renter mentality?
I mean, I think it's a mix. I don't think our politicians are being genuine when they provide ideas and options.
Who you say politicians?
I'd say the mayor and the city council, when they provide property tax increases, but with labels like free pre-K and free community college, and they refuse to talk about the concept that raising property taxes actually increases rents, increases the
because
cost of living in the city,
because
it's passed along to the renter. It really misses what's going on in this city. And so I believe that every voter, if you believe in free pre-K and if you think this is the right route, vote yes on it. But I think if you have misgivings, if you believe that this council has been wasting your money, if you believe that you have a right to be able to say no to bad plans, and then what you'll get is a better plan.
Mm-hmm.
These politicians in Seattle, for those who haven't been here for the last, 10, 20 years, we have a bit of a history with our politicians asking for everything. And then the citizens, when it's the right time, saying, no, that's a little too much. And what happens is your politicians come back with a better plan.
Sometimes. Sometimes they come back with a Shama Sawant-back plan to replace the Amazon head tax with another head tax.
You do. But, one thing to give some credit to Shama that a lot of people didn't. I didn't agree with everything in her plan, but one of her points, and quite a few, were about the government bloat at City Hall and how we should cut that. I don't think we should hire less police, but I think she's 100% right that there are too many bosses and they probably need to trim down the fat at City Hall.
She can do that right now without attaching it to anti-cop policies. She could push that idea right this second without saying that we're going to slow an increase in officer hiring at a time where we are at or below staffing minimums for cops. She can do that without saying we're not going to upgrade computers for officers in their cars, which is necessary for policing. She could do that, but she's not, because she knows none of this is going to pass, but it dangles some the equivalent of red meat, although socialist red meat, for her progressives.
100% agree with you, Jason, but when our opposition in whatever form does point out reasonable ideas like cutting bloat at City Hall, you can look through it and say, it's a bad idea to cut police budgets because we need more police. But yeah, it is a good idea to try to limit the spending at City Hall. So in an environment where every single council member always just points out increasing taxes, I'm going to be here and say that one piece of that, fully, the plan that I wouldn't implement fully was a good idea. But I think this is more important to talk about the ed levy and talk about the concepts of really focusing on priorities in the city. I think every voter, whether you totally agree with the ed levy or not, if I can encourage you to do anything right now going into election season with local issues and then going into 2019, it's to just have really honest and open conversations with your neighbors, because I don't think we should live in an environment where our politicians can tell us taxes have no drawbacks, but then we are encouraged to pass them without really having that conversation. So, the ed levy may not pass. class. And if I am correct, I think you should bring me back on the show to talk about why that happened.
Because, to go, nyeh, 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 that kind of thing, to brag.
Yeah, because I think from a national perspective...
I hope you're right. I certainly hope you're right. Proposition 1 is awful. I voted no.
From a national perspective, Proposition 1 is guaranteed because it has the big teams of labor in Seattle and Amazon. Yep. And from a national perspective, if labor and Amazon agree on anything in Seattle, we must all go shouting to the hills about how correct it is. I don't believe that's true. I believe that there are homeowners, there are renters, there are new residents of Seattle, and there are lifelong residents of Seattle that are actually at their dinner tables having conversations about whether this city should be putting $600 million, $350 million of that over the next 7 years is for free pre-K for 1,000 to 2,000 kids. And those 2,000 kids that are going to receive it, there isn't any income definition on that. So you could have a millionaire that gets discounted at free pre-K from the city, and you could have somebody who's below the poverty line. And I think when money is finite, if we have core issues that we need to support, and the city of Seattle has to provide free pre-K for those in need, we should create a program that provides free pre-K vouchers for those in need below an income threshold and try to manage our money, because mm-hmm. this money isn't finite. We need a new Magnolia Bridge. We need a North Police Precinct. We need more policemen. We need more firefighters. And we need affordable housing built in partnership with the developers in our city. And so sometimes it is fair to say, have we reached the end of our priorities?
That's Saul Spady. He is not running, it seems like, for Seattle City Council, but I think he wants to. So maybe part of the conversations with your neighbor should also say, we should maybe reach out to Saul and encourage him to vote. You've been listening to the Jason Rancho. Saul, I appreciate you stopping by.
Jason, thanks so much for having me.